Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
Look at the local elections this week on Behind the Headlines. Merrick Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us as we continue to do the show remotely. We'll be looking at the local elections this week with the two heads of the local major parties. First up is Chris Tudor, chairman of the Shelby County Republican Party. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Along with Michael Harris, chairman of the Shelby County Democratic Party. Michael, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
And Bill Dries, reporter with the Daily Memphian. I will note at the top, and I'll try to note throughout this, that we are recording this Thursday morning, and while most of the local races are pretty well set, and that's what we're going to focus on today, obviously we'll touch on kind of the national impact. And as of this moment, the national presidential race in the Senate is undecided. Friday, when this airs, is about a lifetime away. I'm sure it'll feel like 100 years from now. So we'll stay away from those national influences, but I wanted, in fairness, if anything seems out of context or strange, given how things may change in the next 36 hours, we are recording this Thursday morning. I flipped a coin. I'm gonna start with you, Chris. And unlike the rest of the show, I do wanna just touch on national for a second. And with that caveat that we're recording this Thursday morning, what is your take on where we are with the national election and what that, how that impacts or impacted Memphis and Shelby County, as best as we can tell at this point?
Sure. So obviously it's still up in the air. We don't know who's going to win this thing, but what is apparent is that yet again, the polls were off disastrously so, and the vaunted blue wave never made it to shore. And I think we saw that here locally as well. So, you know, you had a lot of people anticipating that Vice President Biden would be up, you know, 8 to 10 points in the popular vote, that he would have won a lot of these states that it looks like President Trump won, and that certainly wouldn't have come down to the wire in a lot of these states that are still open. So I think that's about the only thing that we do know right now, is that all these expectations of a landslide, a blowout, the Democrats flipping the Senate, perhaps increasing their majority in the House, those have not come to pass.
Michael, same question to you, again, with the caveat that we're talking about this Thursday morning and a lot is going to change. What is your take on the national election and how that maybe impacted things locally?
I think that a lot is going to change. There are so many states that are technically still on the table. So we don't know what the spread will actually be, but we believe the spread will unfold in a manner that ends with the result that Joe Biden is the becomes the next president of the United States of America. I think that in terms of the impact on turnout and what has happened in Shelby County, I think what we saw, even in the races where we didn't achieve success, is that our Democratic presence is strong, particularly in districts 83 and district 97, where the showing for our Democratic nominee was an incredible showing. And I think one that has not been, it's a showing that has not been demonstrated by the Democratic Party in those districts, I think ever. And so as it relates to what has happened in the country, I think the blue wave is alive and well, it is intact. And I think that the outcome overall will be that we have a better America positioned with democratic leadership that can get us to where we need to be.
Let me bring in Bill, and we'll get more, drill down more on the local races and the impact there. Go ahead, Bill.
And Michael, let's start with State House Districts 83 and 97. Those are the two races that I think Chris was also referring to, where you had Democratic challenges of Republican incumbents in what are suburban state house districts. And those were hard-fought campaigns, to be sure. But the Republican candidates won, an incumbent, Mark White, won re-election and won. John Gillespie won in the open seat for District 97, where Jim Coley, the Republican, had been the incumbent and did not run for re-election. So good showings by the Democratic candidates, but ultimately the Republican contenders won. What do you think the lessons are for your party about the suburbs and how blue or red they might be?
For us, it really comes down to numbering our troops. I think they're, well, really, that's, I guess, the challenge for any political party, really understanding where your base is and how to reach your base in a more impactful way, and also with a degree of accuracy that works for that particular campaign. And so on one hand, we're working to number our troops. And the reason that this is particularly important is because, you know, the strength of our showing, many would assume that in those in District 83 and also District 97, that they are Republican strongholds. But I think the election results demonstrate that we have the ability to capture those districts and gain new territory for Democratic leaders to represent our interests from Shelby County in the State House. So I think that numbering our troops is number one. And from there, then engaging voters, of course, new voters and active voters the same, but making sure that we're accurate with numbering our troops.
Chris, how about that? Are the suburbs outside of the city of Memphis any less red than they were 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think first thing I'll say is hats off to Michael and his team. They recruited some very competitive candidates for these districts. They worked hard. They spent a lot of money. We did too. I'll say this: 83 and 97, they're not exclusively suburban districts, right? So they also include portions of East Memphis, and we're not talking about a district that's exclusively in Lakeland or Cairoville. But the fact remains is that the Republican Party of Shelby County had one primary goal on Tuesday, which was to keep District 83 and District 97 red. And we did that. And Mark White won by 8 points. John Gillespie won by 2 points. And we're very pleased with that. Again, it was hard fought, very competitive, competent candidates. A lot of money was spent and we prevailed. And I think it goes to show that, sure, there may be some movement in some of these districts. Maybe they're less red than they once were, but the Republican Party is strong and voters responded positively toward these candidates, who both of whom I know Mark and John personally. They're good people. They're people of integrity. They love and want to serve Memphis and Shelby County, and they're common sense conservatives. And I think the voters responded to that, even in a year where many people expected it to go the other way. And for what, at a national level, looks like to be a stronger year on average for the Democrats, even though it wasn't as strong as many people were predicting. So I think you take all of those things together and you say, this was a big night for Republicans, and we're thankful for it.
There are more than 1,200 provisional ballots that are still to be counted. Chris, let me stick with you. Do you think that those 1,200 provisional ballots, the ones that will be judged as valid ballots and counted, do you think they will change any of the outcomes?
I don't see how. No. Mathematically, I guess it's possible, right? Because John Gillespie's up by almost 500 votes. But you got to think that, only a portion of those are from District 97, maybe a maximum a couple of hundred. So that's not going to be the difference. I mean, I would be interested to hear if there's another opinion, but that's sort of my gut call based on my understanding.
Michael, you have some concerns about those provisional ballots that kind of go beyond changing the outcomes of races, although that would be pretty big if it happened. What are your concerns about those ballots?
My concern about provisional ballots is that, what we did is we looked at a sample of provisional ballots from our primary, that was our Democratic primary for this set of elections. And what we found is that of 200 provisional ballots that have been cast, only 20 of them were legitimate provisional ballot type situations. And the other 180 should have been paper ballots. And so that is a particular concern because provisional ballots often aren't even counted unless there is a close race. And that's a problem. The whole idea of this election process is to make sure that everyone's voice, which is connected to their vote, is heard. And I think it's worth always counting each vote, regardless of what the outcome is. But certainly, you know, we are particularly concerned when it comes to the District 97 race because of the number of provisional ballots that are out there. That number is just from early voting. We don't know how many provisional ballots were cast on election day. And so we are certainly going to request the imaging there and look into the situation because we want to make sure that we get an accurate result, whatever the accurate result is. One thing is for sure, you know, the provisional ballot situation needs to be fixed in terms of how we manage it and how accurate we are in Shelby County with that.
When you say they should have been paper ballots, a voter can vote a paper ballot without it being a provisional ballot. What do you mean when you say that they should have been paper ballot votes?
And so, you know, a typical situation could be someone who has an address change issue or, you know, someone who is relocated and can meet all of the other requirements that are listed. But for whatever reason, we have someone working at the on behalf of the Election Commission that does not know the rules or capability that they have in order to issue a paper ballot. And in many instances, I feel that it's not even a matter of not qualifying. It's just trying to move people through the lines. So you offer them a provisional ballot. And so it becomes an issue far too often. And then there are situations that once resolved should just be resolved. You know, we had several situations where a person had a prior felony that they had dealt with. They had their citizenship restored along with their right to vote, had properly registered to vote, and were properly at the polls to cast their vote. And because they had the felony, which they have already dealt with, gotten expunged, already, gotten the citizenship restored, they had to vote on a provisional ballot. So what happens is that, you know, they've gotten their vote right to vote restored, but they can't, their vote won't likely be counted if they're, you know, for the races that aren't really, really close races. Mm-hmm.
Let me back out of the weeds here politically and talk a little more generally before I send it back to Eric. And I'll start with you, Chris. We had what by all accounts was at least a record for the early vote in a presidential general election. But then we saw an election day that was really, really slow. And the result was, at the most, we had a 65% turnout here. Chris, talk to me about what that turnout means to you in terms of future participation.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think it's wonderful that we had so many people exercise their rights to vote. And coming back real quickly to Michael's previous point, Michael, we're on the same page, man. This is the first I've heard about the provisional ballots issue, but I agree with you wholeheartedly that every vote needs to be counted. So just let me know what we can do to coordinate with the Election Commission to make sure that we can do a better job of that next time. So that's important to us. But back to your point, Bill, about turnout, I think it's wonderful that so many people participated. I was sort of expecting, since we had banked so many votes during early voting, that it was going to be a little bit slower on election day, and it was. But that's a wonderful thing. And, you know, I was looking at the numbers a little bit more closely yesterday, and obviously this is a November federal election, but and President Trump was not near a majority in Shelby County, which was not expected. It was, you know, 35-36%. But if you look at the numbers of people that voted for the president or voted Republican generally, you know, voted for Ambassador Hagerty, our new senator-elect, there are numbers there that show that the Republican Party is going to be competitive for years and years in this county, especially in August elections. So, you know, that are lower turnout, of course, but the numbers are there. So, again, very, very pleased to see the big turnout. Love it that more people are participating. Hope that continues to increase. Also happy to see that there are a lot of fired up Republicans who are coming to the polls in this county.
Let me, Michael. Go ahead, yeah. Bill.
Michael, let me put this a little bit differently. When we've had the majority of registered voters in this county, the majority of that, not the majority of the election day turnout, but the majority of the voters on the rolls in Shelby County turnout, what was the election day slowness kind of inevitable with that?
It was certainly something we were wondering about. We were hoping that we would have a more aggressive turnout on election day, but you know, I think a 65% turnout overall in Shelby County is near the top end of where we've been when we've had our best years for any political race. And so I'm happy that we had this kind of performance in this election cycle, but certainly we want the numbers to be higher. And so for us, we were looking for a more aggressive turnout than what we saw, but certainly we're happy that people did get out more aggressively compared to what we were seeing after what we saw in early voting, which was just an amazing effort by Shelby County residents to go vote early.
Let me go to you, Chris, and I'll add similar question then to Michael, but Chris, so the Tennessee will have a supermajority at the state again, you know, governor, Senate, House. They've had this for now, you know, many, many years. Where are there points where this supermajority of Republicans can, particularly the Shelby delegation of Republicans, looks and says, you know what, our interests very much align with local Democrats, right? Because once you get to, what I'm saying is, you know, there are some people out there who just want Republicans, and there are some people out there who just want Democrats. And there are a lot of people out there, my sense is, who really want the government to work for, say, Memphis, or say for Shelby County broadly. Are there points where you'll look to, fellow Republicans will look to the Shelby County Democrats in the House and Senate to say, let's work together on X, Y, and Z issues? Or will there not be any of that? Because you don't really need to work with the Democrats to get things done up there.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. So first of all, my understanding, and I'm obviously not a legislator, but my understanding, knowing these guys, is that they do have collaborative, healthy relationships with their Democratic counterparts. And the Republicans, our Republican delegation to Nashville, regardless of whether their district overlaps with the city of Memphis or not, these people, they love Memphis, they love Shelby County, and they're working hard. And I think, I don't think that there is a disconnect between the goals of the Republican supermajority in Nashville and the goals that we have in Memphis of more jobs, of better schools, of more money spent on public safety. I don't think there's a disconnect there, but I also think that there is an opportunity to work together. And I have heard the Republican state delegation to Nashville, I've heard them speak very highly of their Democratic counterparts. So I'm hopeful, as a person who lives in this county, that as much as possible on these bread and butter issues, where it's not a Republican versus Democrat thing, it's a what's best for Memphis thing, that they can collaborate and work together. And I'm hopeful for that. And I think you've seen the results. It wasn't too long ago that we had Democratic supermajorities. It was just, in fact, the other day, right? Just 10, 15 years ago, max. Since Republicans have taken over, we have jumped in educational attainment for our students, how much money we're paying teachers. We've certainly jumped in job growth. And if you look at our real wage growth, if you look at unemployment, I mean, Tennessee is leading the way under Republican leadership. And I don't think that can be denied. And I think that's great for Memphis and Shelby County too. So I'm looking forward to see more of that.
We got about 7 minutes left here, Michael. I'm going to shift a little bit and ask you about the last two Senate races in Tennessee. Bill can check me on this, but if I remember, it was 2 years ago that Phil Bredesen ran against Marshall Blackburn. Mm-hmm. Phil Bredesen in the mode of a kind of moderate, almost conservative sort of Democrat, highly, very rich, self-funded campaign, spent tens of millions of dollars and lost quite badly, really. Marquita is in a whole different, kind of a different, more grassroots organizer, more traditional liberal. I'm painting broad strokes here, so forgive me. not huge amounts of money, but some amount of money, and also lost, you know, badly, not in Shelby County. I mean, like 2-1, probably she won, if not more, in Shelby County. And she, it appears she'll probably win Nashville, but that's not how we count the votes. She'll lose quite badly, it appears, overall. Where do you all go next as a Democratic Party? And I know you're just part of the state party, right? Where do the Democrats go next if they ever want to get a senator with from the Democratic Party in Tennessee?
And by next, do you mean candidate-wise?
Yeah, yeah. What type of candidate might work?
Well, you know, certainly we want a candidate that is a stick-to-the-issues candidate for what we believe in as Democrats in the broad sense. But, you know, we want more candidates like a Marquita Bradshaw who are willing to do the work and hit the streets and meet people and engage and find out what's important and who's willing to be a champion for those issues. We're looking for a champion who's willing to take a stand. And I think that's what people in Tennessee want. I think that's what people in America want. And so, you know, we're looking for more bold leaders. I think the one thing that she did that was really impressive and I think made a huge impact was that she traveled the state and she campaigned statewide. She hit counties, countless times. And I don't know how many counties in total, but she tried her best to reach as many counties in the state of Tennessee as possible. I think going forward, we'll definitely have to take some more aggressive moves to be sure that we can financially resource candidates in a way that can help us be more competitive. And lastly, I just have to do this. Let me just swing back, to your question earlier in relation to, representation in our state house. I think, the concern that I had is that, while we agree often on some of the simple issues, we try to work in a bipartisan type way. The problem is not just that. I think the problem is in the areas where we disagree and there's no bend and flex. And I don't think that the success or at least the improvements that we've had with the state of Tennessee are a result of Republican leadership. I think they're just a result of just fundamental development that has been happening in the state. But I don't think that in terms of us leading the way, I mean, compared to who? In terms of the state of Tennessee, so I don't know where that statement comes from or what authority or information that's based on, but we aren't leading the way in this country. And I think in part because we aren't open as a result of Republican leadership that's not really focused on the issues that affect a place like Shelby County or like Davidson County. We're not open to that.
Let me go back to Chris for a second, just a couple of minutes left. And two things on that theme. One, there is always a concern, it seems to me, I hear a lot, let me put it that way, concern from business and political people in Memphis across all political backgrounds that does the legislature really care about Memphis? That Memphis is not a priority, whether that's economic development, whether that's a new big manufacturing plant, whether that's education, whatever it is. Do you feel as, again, you're not a legislator, fair enough, but the head of the local Republican Party, a real onus to make sure that Memphis stays at the top, Memphis and the Memphis area, right? The Shelby County area is a priority for the legislature and the governor. And do you see that? Do you see that sort of we are second class kind of, is that just us being kind of feeling like stepchildren or is that real?
I'm sensitive about it too, Eric. I am. I think part of that is self-imposed. I think part of that's being a Memphian and that we always do feel like stepchildren. But I have spoken directly with the governor. I saw Senator-elect Hagerty the other day. They are insistent upon prioritizing Memphis and West Tennessee. And let me make two further points. If you really want to make that better, if you want to prioritize that and ensure that Memphis has a better, bigger voice, you don't vote Democrat in a local race because they have no power in Nashville. They are a tiny minority. There's going to be 6 Democratic state senators. Instead, you vote to increase the Republican delegation. You vote to return strong state reps like Mark White back to Nashville, who has a lot of influence and power, and you shore that up because that's where we're going to have a bigger voice. The stronger Republican delegation we have, the bigger voice we have. And to respond to Michael's comment, and this is the result of we could go into great detail about how much Tennessee has improved under Republican leadership, but this was the very top of my Google search I did 20 seconds ago. This is from Forbes magazine, the best states for business. Tennessee is now number 7. I can tell you something right now. It wasn't there when Democrats were running Tennessee 15 years ago. I can just tell you that much. And you can look at unemployment rates. You can look at real wage growth. Governor Haslam and Governor Lee are delivering for Tennessee. They're delivering for Shelby County. They're delivering for Memphis, and they're doing a good job at it.
Let me, we got a minute left and we got all kinds of things to get to, but let me just stay with you, Chris, for a second, because to talk about what looks to be the new Senator Hagerty. Will, you know, Senator Alexander was hardly in Memphis.
Yeah.
Marsha Blackburn, Senator Blackburn, has hardly been in Memphis.
Yeah.
I don't think that's just a perception. I think that's a reality. Will Bill Hagerty have more of a presence in Memphis, not just listening to the people who voted for him, but to everyone in Memphis and Shelby County?
I think so. But let's hold him to that. Let's hold him to that. I'm committed to that. Our Republicans are committed to that. I talked to him about it just a couple of days ago. Listen, Bill Hagerty won that primary because West Tennessee and Shelby County delivered for him. And I think he's going to remember that. And I think he's a good and decent man who cares about this entire state. When he ran the Tennessee Economic Development Department, they worked hard on getting jobs here in Memphis and Shelby County. And I want to see that continue. But we're also going to repeatedly request that and hold our leaders accountable. I mean, we want them to be here. We want them to shower Memphis and Shelby County with the attention that it deserves.
All right, that is all the time we have this week. More things we could have got to, but we didn't. Thank you both for being here. Reminder, we recorded this Thursday morning, so obviously some things may have changed by Friday, at least on the national stage. But that is all the time we have this week. You can get the full episode if you joined us late at WKNO.org. You can download the full podcast from the Daily Memphian site or wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, Shelby County Mayor Lee Harris and the County Health Director Alyssa Haushalter. Please join us then.